Yahweh, He who, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Kaschana, someone. Ishaha, the Supreme Controller. Balinaha, very powerful. Atakauragat, from the great serpent of time, which brings death. Prachandavegat, whose force is fearful. Abhidavataha, who is chasing Vrisham endlessly, every hour and every minute. Abhitam, one who is afraid of death. Prapanam, who is surrendered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Paripati, he protects. Yatvayat, from fear of the Lord. Mrityuhu, death itself. Pradavati, runs away. Adanam, the actual shelter of everyone. Tam, unto him. Imahi, I surrender or take shelter. Translation, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is certainly not known to everyone, but he is very powerful and influential. Therefore, although the serpent of eternal time, which is fearful in force, endlessly chases everyone ready to swallow him, if one who fears this serpent seeks shelter of the Lord gives him protection, for even death runs away in fear of the Lord. I therefore surrender unto him, the great and powerful supreme authority, who is the actual shelter of everyone. So you can repeat. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is certainly not known to everyone, but he is very powerful and influential. Therefore, although the serpent of eternal time, which is fearful in force, endlessly chases everyone, ready to swallow him, if one who fears this serpent seeks shelter of the Lord gives him protection. For even death runs away in fear of the Lord. I therefore surrender unto him, the great and powerful supreme authority, who is the actual shelter of everyone. So purport by his divine grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. One who is intelligent understands that there is a great and supreme authority above everything. That great authority appears in different incarnations to save the innocent from disturbances. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, in the fourth chapter, text 8, Ritranaya sadunam vinashaya chaduskritam. The Lord appears in his various incarnations for two purposes, to annihilate the duskriti, the sinful, and to protect his devotees. The king of the elephants decided to surrender unto him. This is intelligent. One must know that great supreme personality of Godhead and surrender unto him. The Lord comes personally to instruct us how to be happy. And only fools and rascals do not see by intelligence the supreme authority. The supreme person. In the Shruti mantra, it is said, Vishachmanvata pavate vishodeti surya vishasmad agnis chandrascha Vachudavati Panchamaha. That's from the Taittiriya Upanishad 2.8. It is out of fear of the Supreme Personality of Godhead that the wind is blowing, that the sun is distributing heat and light, and that death is chasing everyone. Thus, there is a supreme controller as confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita in the 9th chapter, text 10. Mayadyakshena prakati suyate sachadacharam. This material manifestation is working so well because of the supreme controller. Any intelligent person, therefore, can understand that there is a supreme controller. Furthermore, the supreme controller himself appears as Lord Krishna, as Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and as Lord Ramachandra to give us instructions and to show us, by example, how to surrender unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Yet those who are Dushkriti, the lowest of men, do not surrender. Namam Dushkritino Mudha Prapajante Narada Maha. In Bhagavad Gita, the Lord clearly says, Mrityu Sarvaharaschaham, I am all devouring death. Thus, Mrityu or death is the representative who takes away everything, who takes everything away from the living entity who has accepted a material body. No one can say, I do not fear death. This is a false proposition. Everyone fears death. However, one who seeks shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead can be saved from death. One may argue, does the devotee not die? The answer is that a devotee certainly must give up his body, for the body is material. The difference is, however, that for one who surrenders to Krishna fully and who is protected by Krishna, the present body is his last. He will not again receive a material body to be subjected to death. This is assured in Bhagavad Gita in the 4th chapter, text 9. Chaturdeham punarjanma naitimam eti sorjana. A devotee, after giving up his body, does not accept a material body, but returns home back to Godhead. We are always in danger because at any moment death can take place. It is not that only Gajendra, the king of the elephants, was afraid of death. Everyone should fear death because everyone is caught by the crocodile of eternal time and may die at any moment. The best course, therefore, is to seek shelter of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, to be saved from the struggle for existence in this material world in which one repeatedly takes birth and dies. To reach this understanding is the ultimate goal of life. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 8th canto, 2nd chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled The Elephant Gajendra's Crisis. Okay? Kaschanesho balinon takoragat prachanda vegara vitavato brisham vitam prapanam paripati advayan mrityu pradavat yaranam tam imahi. So, Om Ganat Madanda Shah Gadanjana Shilakaya Jaksud Unmeditam Yenatas Mai Shigurvena Maha. This is quite a poetic expression. And if you picture this in your mind's eye, in your imagination, of a snake chasing you, it's quite frightening. And actually, that's what's happening. So here it is mentioned that if one takes shelter of the Lord gives him protection. So implicit in this particular verse is that the Lord is good and compassionate, which is very interesting. Because practically speaking, and it's not to criticize any other religion, or maybe it is, practically speaking, in the Krishna consciousness movement, we have the best understanding about the Lord's compassion. I mean, let's contrast that with what's taught in most of Christianity, okay? In most of Christianity, it is taught, first of all, you only have one life. That's a problem, too. And if you don't make it in this life, that's it. And if you commit the mortal sin of not surrendering to Jesus in this life, and that's not even a sin of commission, it's a sin of omission. So let me explain what I mean by that. Commission means you do something, like say a sin, like I take some marijuana and start smoking. Omission means like when the guru comes in, you don't open the door for him or something like that. That's omission. Omission means you don't do it. Commission means you do it. So, you know, obviously, in most cases, a sin of commission is more serious than a sin of omission. You know, just like it's described in Brigham Mooney was going around offending different controllers of the universe. First of all, he offended Lord Brahma by not offering respects. That's a sin of omission. And then he offended Lord Shiva by saying some nasty things to Lord Shiva. Like, you just hang out in the crematorium. You're just dirty. Don't go near me, my dear brother. And then he committed the greatest sin of commission by kicking Lord Vishnu in the chest. And because of that us Brahmins have financial problems. If we get money, it tends to get lost, you know, as a matter of, anyway, so that's another issue. So these are the two types of sins. So in Christianity, if you happen to commit the sin of omission, in other words, not surrender to Jesus Christ, and it's not even a, it's not even a gross sin. It's a, you know, it's a mental thing. You haven't surrendered in your mind. So it's a mental sin of not surrendering. Then God throws you into a lake of, you know, prasadam. No, a lake. You know, like the milk ocean or something like that, where you can just drink milk. Because we were reading about the milk ocean, where the demigods actually sport in the milk ocean, which is kind of nice. There's also an ocean of liquor. There's an ocean of oil. There's also some different oceans. So, in other words, you get set into a lake of eternal fire, whatever that is. I mean, probably like petroleum. Like they had that problem in Canada with the oil sands, that they caught fire. And then, obviously, they didn't throw anybody into it. I mean, if you had thrown someone into the oil sands, it would just be the most heinous activity imaginable. So that they would just watch them burn. So in other words, God is depicted as watching us burn eternally. I mean, it's even worse than going into the oil sands and burning, because you don't die. At least in the oil sands, you know, they throw you in, you experience some pain, and that's it. You know, it's all over, buddy. But if you actually get in the lake of eternal fire, it's never over. So, I mean, that God is a monster, isn't it? I mean, even Ravana, you know, he wasn't that bad. He just killed you and ate you. You know, he's a nice cannibal, you know. Magrari was a little worse because he tortured you before he killed you. But this, I mean, do you want to worship such a God? Who does that? And, you know, and then you read, I mean, of course, not all, in practically all the Abrahamic religions, I mean, they were changed. I mean, obviously, Jesus Christ did not teach that. He certainly didn't teach that at all. And Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, my forefather, didn't teach that. And Muhammad didn't teach that, but his followers, so-called modern followers, they actually teach that. And so the God, who wants to worship such a God? You commit a mental sin of omission, and you go to hell forever. And you get tortured forever. Anyway, so Krishna, one of the qualities of Krishna, like we learn about God, you know, here we're talking about how God is all-powerful, omnipotent, omniscient, he's aware of everything, but he's also all good. You know, you take all these wonderful qualities, and that's God. Actually, that's called the natural definition of God. You cannot think of anyone who is better, anyone who is more powerful than him, and that person must be God. So that's why Prabhupada would sometimes say that, you know, we accept Krishna as God, so if you have any other candidates, put up or shut up. You know, if you think that there's someone more attractive than God, yeah, let some Bollywood star or Hollywood star, like that, you know, some dancers, anyway, I'm not going to mention the names of any of these people. More attractive, more renounced, I mean the eight qualities, six qualities, sorry, of Bhagavan, then, you know, just come up with him and then we'll worship that particular individual. Just like there was one bogus god who has died recently and he was quite ugly. And people were worshiping him as God, you know. So, but when people saw Krishna, they fainted in ecstasy. I mean, the people would stand. Like, Krishna entered Dwarka, entered Hastinapur, it's described in the Bhagavatam. All the ladies would just like line up on the rooftops and practically be fainting in ecstasy. Why are they on the rooftops? Because the chaste ladies didn't come down. Anyway, of course, we can't imitate that nowadays. That old lady should just be on the rooftops. Actually, it's interesting. One time I was in Ujjain for the opening of the temple, and this Bollywood actress was there. Her name was Rani Mukherjee, and all the men were on the rooftops watching her. With binoculars, and the Indian Army was out there protecting her. So, it's like a perverse reflex. You know, the men were out there drooling on the rooftops. Yeah. So, anyway, so the women, you know, people faint when they see Krishna's beauty. And they faint when they hear about Krishna's compassion. Hey, Krishna Karuna Sindhu. Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta. Radha Kanta Namostute. I mean, Krishna is an ocean of compassion, an ocean of mercy. So in other words, Krishna is always there, as described in the Upanishads, like two birds in the tree. And he's waiting for us to turn back to him. And if we turn back to him, if we realize that we're in danger, like a devotee is like that, he alerts people to the danger. It's like the other day, people were fixing our roof here. So I was watching, are they getting close to the edge? And if they had gotten close to the edge, I mean, obviously I would have said, watch out! Look behind you. You know, that happens sometimes. People are climbing on roofs and they fall off. So they didn't, fortunately. So if you don't do that, then you're not only uncompassionate, but you're cruel. So a devotee has to continually warn people. And sometimes people say, why do you speak so much about this death? You know, death is coming, death. You know, just so, you are so negative here in the Krishna consciousness movement. Well, we don't want people to procrastinate. It's like, it's mentioned that, you know, determination in the mode of ignorance, you put off something for tomorrow that you could do today. It's just like, if someone, in the typical example Prabhupada gives, someone is living in an apartment and the lease is running out and you're going to get kicked out, and they're not looking for another place, that's stupid. So people are stupid. And of course, there's that famous verse, which I quoted the other day in reference to this, you know, Hani Hani Bhutani Gachanti Yamalaya. The most wonderful thing is that people are so stupid, they see everyone die and they think not themselves. that's described by Yudhisthira Maharaj in the Mahabharata, that everyone is going to Yamaraj, but not me. I'm going to go to everyone's funeral, but I'm not going to go to my own. Probably won't be at your own, because you'll be somewhere else. But your body will be there. So, therefore, it's our business to awaken people, and sometimes we need these descriptions, poetic, metaphorical descriptions, the serpent of eternal time, which is fearful in force, endlessly chases everyone, ready to swallow him. So, of course, one who is actually an advanced devotee doesn't fear the serpent. This preaching is for not advanced devotees, for people who are, you know, not devotees, or people who are just starting in Krishna consciousness. For those, we have to, you know, emphasize again and again. For an advanced devotee is Abhaya Sattva Samshuti Jnana Yoga Pavastati. That means an advanced devotee is free of fear because he has his knowledge. He has the knowledge. Just like the first time you go on an airplane, it's very fearful. Isn't it? I mean, it's very fearful. You go, at least that was my experience. Yeah, you look at, oh my God, you know, I'm not in control. I mean, that's actually one of the main problems with flying or sitting in the passenger seat in a car. That's why I hate being a passenger in a car, because I'm not in control. So the first time you're stuck in this little tube and you go up in the air and you know, it's turning here, turning there, you know, oh my God, is it going to land? And then there's this little bag in the seat in front of you just in case you get sick. Call it a barf bag anyway. So, but then after a while, like I go flying all the time. After a while, it's just like, you know, relaxing. It's not fearful anymore because, you know, you've done it. Seen it, done it, been there. So in the same way, one who has knowledge, death to him is just like getting in an airplane and going somewhere else. That's all. It's very simple. However, that's for one who has realized knowledge. For those of us who haven't realized that yet, it's good to be reminded of death. So, and what does that do? What does it mean to take shelter of the Lord? Taking shelter of the Lord basically means to cry out, to chant properly, to understand when we're performing our sadhana, this may be the last day that we have the opportunity to perform our sadhana. We better be attentive, because all the other things you're thinking of and planning to do while you're chanting your japa, you know, japa appears to be the best time for coming up with new ideas how to destroy the world. Or, you know, how to, isn't it? I mean, so many things that pop into the mind. And then we pull the mind back, and then the next mantra, the mind goes away again. We pull the mind back. It's just like all these plans, you know, what about my computer? What about the internet? What about this devotee? You know, especially if you have responsibilities, it's all these things pop in your mind. And then, but if you actually understood that this might be your last day on earth, and this may be the last round that you have an opportunity, this may be the last mantra that you have an opportunity to chant, and you're going to be extremely attentive. I mean, just like when I'm in a car, and I'm not the driver. I was driving with someone in Australia, and he commented, he said, every time you see something that's dangerous, you chant Hare Krishna. Is that a problem, Maharaj? I said, it's not a problem. You should be trained up to do that. Yet he thought, this is weird. It was a devotee. It wasn't a non-devotee. It's a young man, very nice young man. And he said, why do you do? Why do you have this habit? You know, every time there's some, you know, there's a car that rushes from the side, you go, Hare Krishna. I said, you better develop that habit too, because you don't know when it's coming. So anyway, so this is an impetus. What we're hearing described about the snake of death is an impetus to take Krishna consciousness seriously and not waste any time. We waste so much time in Krishna consciousness. Not in Krishna consciousness. We waste so much time doing so many things, talking prajalpa, overeating, watching the news, you know, CNN, Fox News, if we happen to be a follower of Donald Trump. So that's one thing. Another thing is, that's as far as ourselves. Another point is, as far as everyone else, they're all on the precipice too. So when we're not doing our personal sadhana, we should be dedicating our lives to helping others because they're at the point of death. I mean, just like recently we had people in our congregation just die all of a sudden. I mean, it's brought home to you many, many times, especially since I know a lot of people. Practically every day I get a notice like this. You know, one night I was with this person. We were doing this nice Damodar program. He was helping light the candles. It was in the yoga. He was lighting the candles. And then next morning, his wife says, you know, he passed away in the middle of the night. He died. And he was happy. You didn't have it. There was no inclination or no indication, sorry. There was no indication that anything was wrong. And just gone. Like that. So, therefore, in dealing with other people, we should never act violently. I'm not talking violently, just, you know, physically violently beating them or something. Just like I was talking to one of my friends from India, and I was asking him how his schooling was. I said, "Do you ever get beaten?" He said, "Yeah, all the time." So, so they had bamboo sticks, rulers on the edge. They would hit you in the knuckles, not rulers like that, but rulers on the edge. I said, "Oh my God, maybe you should teach us how to run the Gurukul here." So we could never do that. Obviously, that's not proper. So he said he saw the principal quite a bit. He was quite cheeky, as they say, quite tricky. So by violence means to really impede someone's spiritual progress. Prabhupada gave a wider definition of violence than we're accustomed to. You know, normally we think violence is, it's an act of violence. But act of violence is somehow or other. If we're, let's say to other devotees, if we're mean to them and discourage them from devotional service, we don't take, or even if by omission, we don't take the opportunity to encourage them in devotional service, that's violence. The whole material world is on fire. I mean, we hear this all the time. Of course, the first verse in the Guru Vashtaka in the morning, Samsara Dhavana Niloka, it's a blazing fire. So everyone's just like getting ready to jump into the pit of death, be swallowed by the serpent. So this is an impetus for us to, whatever available time we have, is to try to help people in Krishna consciousness. So this is what we can learn from this. This is meant to be applied in our own lives, these instructions. And Krishna is always waiting for us to turn to him, to bring other people to him. Krishna is always there waiting. So that's his compassion. He's a loving God. I mean, our depiction or our understanding of God is just like so attractive. I don't want to worship the God that's cruel and a monster. I don't. I refuse to worship such a God. I want to worship a God who's loving, and even if I make a mistake, he'll forgive me. Like Prabhupada indicates that. Anyway, Prabhupada was very forgiving. I mean, there's sometimes, I mean, yesterday, for example, you know, I got a letter from one disciple who said, "I'm not doing too well in Krishna consciousness, you know, breaking the principles." You get these letters all the time. And he said, "If you want, you can reject me." And I was thinking, you know, what would Prabhupada do? You can't reject such a person. You just, I said, "No, I'm never going to reject you. However, go to this particular devotee and take shelter." You know, there was an instruction. It wasn't just sentimental. "I'm not going to reject you." So Krishna's like that too. He never gives up. And of course, in the book Bhagavad Gita, you hear this, you know, about the demons. They're put into lower and lower species of life, never to approach me. But that's not never, never, never. It's just a long time. They got some lessons to learn. And even the punishments in this world are compassionate. Even the diseases, the threefold miseries, they're all part of the Lord's compassion to bring us back to Him. So everything the Lord does with us or does with His material energy is actually out of compassion, out of love. He's an all-loving God. I mean, anyway, so I just wanted to speak about that in contrast to the Judaic Christian or the Abrahamic understandings or the Middle Eastern understandings of God. So, I mean, I was just hearing about how when they did the Crusades, the people were so cruel that they even killed other Christians. They just thought, well, let's God just sort it out. You know, as they were going to the Holy Land, they were just killing, you know, Jews, Christians, Muslims, didn't matter. Let God's, because they were all mixed amongst each other, all the people. Let just God sort it out what He's going to do with all these people. But that's not a God that I want. I want to love God. I want God to love me. So I guess that's it. We got about 10 seconds. Any questions or comments? 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, what?
John 16, 19, what?
Yeah.
That's the one where it's Krishna's prerogative to just let them go. Not that he actually gives up.
But he never gives up. But he puts them into lower and lower species of life. It says never to approach me. But really, as I said, it's not never, never, never. It's just until they learn their lesson, Krishna will always allow them to come back. And even if they're in lower species of life, it's not usually like a brimstone fire. You know, even the Nagas in the lower planets are enjoying the celestial, subterranean heavenly planets. You know, so even I was reading the other day about some like microscopic creature, how he enjoys conjugal love with the other microscopic creatures. All glory to Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. You see the deities now? Jai, Shishi Radhika Lokananda, Radhika Lokananda Ki Jai.
Oh, Thank you. Thank you.